better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Today, since it's Wednesday, it's what you're beefing.
Go to work. What do you mean?
Because you're not excited about it.
Oh,
not passionate about it. You're not fired up.
You at least like getting paid, don't you?
Well, no. I mean, hey, listen, we all love getting paid, but you know, it's one of those things that you hit that point in time. You're like, oh man, how am I going
to
make it through this?
How do I get paid and not go to work?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we all
how many sick
out.
Days do I have left that I can take here today? I mean, that's
out. Oh man.
Yeah, exactly. So
what happens if I really get sick?
But the thing is I know our Morning Rush listeners. You guys are hard workers, and you go to work with your head held high, and you go to support yourself and support your family.
Right.
I get all that. But let's just be honest, though. You hit that point, though, where you just want to. You just want to vent out. You just want to say, you know what? I don't want to deal with this today. Well, that's luckily what this show is for you on Wednesdays, because it's What's Your Beef Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And so today is all about complaining. It's about whining. It's about venting frustrations. And it's acceptable. No one's ever going to put you down for complaining. No one's ever going to judge you for complaining. None of those things.
We're going to encourage you to complain.
That's right. In fact, we open up all lines of communication for you to complain. You can call or text in at 877-377-6963. You can watch our live stream on Periscope, Facebook Live, Twitter. You can do that, YouTube. And you can comment there. Your beefs will be heard. Trying to think of any other way. Am I missing something? I mean, email? I mean,
if you could mail it. We wouldn't get it today, but we could read it next week.
That's right. That's right. I don't do Morse code. But I could learn real quick if you needed to do it that way. Smoke signals. Well, however it is to communicate, we can make it work. Tommy knows sign language, so I don't know how you'd get that message in here with sign language. But
I'm not sure how well that would translate on the radio.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that would just be some awkward silence there for a while. But either way, find a way to make sure that your beef is known today on What's Your Beef.
Morse code. Now, that's correctly M-O-R-S-E, isn't that?
I think so.
Yeah. Maybe we need to start a deal Morris code, you know, like Chad Morris, and have something during football season, you know, with something he says.
Which, boom, boom, boom.
No, I think that might be.
I didn't have the sounder.
You poo-pooed the idea so quickly.
No, I was mainly
flesh this thing out.
Listen, no, I like the idea. It's just it was just like a kind of like a joke. Well, not a Morse code, a Morris code.
Yeah,
you know, it's just kind of, it's like such a. It's a Tommy Kraft joke,
don't
and I
run,
appreciate
I'm
it.
I'm telling you, if we don't run with this, there will be other shows that do.
I know. Because everyone's already steering our
the
stuff all the time.
The best idea I've had all day.
I know. I mean, we're out here.
It's what, 6:04 now?
Yeah. Well, I guess you're done for the day.
Yeah. Good seeing you, folks. Yeah. I'm out of here.
Take the rest of the day off, Tommy. You've earned it.
With pay.
But you know what, Tommy? Maybe we can figure out something. I don't know what we'll make work with Morse code.
There's the idea. I'm the idea, man. Y'all go figure out how to execute it.
Morse code. Yeah.
The Morse code.
We'll figure that out.
But that's one of those things that will show up if he wins.
Only if he wins. Yeah. Only if he wins. So there'll probably be some hashtags. And then if we made it big, though, then the U of A would come in or the NCAA and say they got to make the money on it.
You owe us 9% on that.
Yeah, I gotta love the great NCAA and the university for all those things, too. So, but, you know, there's a few things obviously going on, not only from this previous few days, but also heading in this upcoming weekend, too. And last night, you know, it's kind of in that lull of sports, too. But did you see the fight that broke out in Major League Baseball last night between the Reds and the Pirates?
Did not. You may be honest or you may lie. Which one do you want?
Do it for the show, Tommy. Whichever one's better.
Yes, I saw it. It was the best baseball fight ever.
There you go. There you go. Well, I'll tell you what.
I was watching the other fight.
Oh, yeah.
I was watching the other fight on CNN.
Oh, yeah. So, they had the old debates,
asleep.
Too.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, that's high-class entertainment, no matter which way you go with
exactly.
It. But,
so, no, I didn't see any baseball fights last night.
Yeah, and let's be honest, folks. I wasn't sitting there watching the Pirates and the Reds in their game, so this was something that just kind of came across the timeline on Twitter and whatnot.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring it up is because I find it fascinating in baseball more than anything. Because we've seen fights break out in every sport. Let's just be honest. Because you get a bunch of people who are highly competitive and they want to win badly and emotions get the best of them a lot of times and fights break out. I mean, Tommy, you've been officiating. I'm sure there's been some scuffles that's happened in your day
that
you've seen.
That.
I know, but you've seen them. You've seen them happen.
Too recently.
And the thing is, Tommy, is I could be wrong about that, but you can probably see it coming a little bit after a while where it's like, okay, it builds and builds and builds and then it explodes.
From our perspective, sometimes, you know, you say it's getting chippy out here. You try to tighten things up and you try to prevent those type of things from happening. On occasion, you can. But the two I've been involved in 17 years as an official, one we saw, you see it after the fact.
Yeah.
But, you know, one last year, it was just boom.
Just
you know,
like boom. It was like a bomb just went off and you're like, oh, whoa.
Nothing leading up to it that really indicated here's an issue.
Yeah. But, I mean, if there was, though, you as an official would try to do what you could to, you know, chill everybody out.
Absolutely.
So, but the thing is, in baseball, and I don't know if it's because of just the separation of the teams out in the field because they're so far away from each other or how far away the...
There's not a lot of physical contact between opponents in baseball.
Correct, correct.
Basketball, football, there's a lot of... There's not much proximity between the opponents.
Yeah, and any time that there's a fight breaks out, it always involves one particular position, a pitcher. Because, I mean, I could be wrong. I don't see the outfielder and the third baseman from the other team ever going after it randomly. Like, that just, it's right. Always because you got the pitcher throwing balls that maybe hits a few players or trying to throw a little chin music at them, whatever. And it ends
that's
up
the interaction that creates that the spark
right
for the explosion.
Yeah. Yes. Well, Amir Garrett for the Reds last night just... It was chippiness. There's some history between these two opponents. And there was some noise being said from the dugout. So not even from a batter that's on a base or a guy he just recently hit at the plate. It's from the dugout. And he's doing the old covering his mouth with the glove, you know, talking. Can't let the umpire see what you're saying or hear what you're saying. Well, it just boils over. And then he basically Leroy Jenkins himself over to the dugout. He starts running in as hard as he can to take on the entire team and throws a punch at a guy that's standing. And then the mob of the Pirates come in. Well, you can't have the rest of the team out there can't helping their boy. So they come rolling in, and it all happens in the melee in their dugout. But listen, I've seen a lot of fights, and again, they interest me. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be suspensions and all that because that needs to happen. But
it's best part of baseball.
I know, but it's interesting how this guy, Amir Garrett, took on the whole team. I mean, that's bravery right there. I mean, he looked like, I think Golic and Wingo was describing it as looking like William Wallace in Braveheart, just going right in and taking on the armies himself. I just really thought it was fascinating, and that's the only reason I would ever talk about the Reds or the Pirates here on this show. But I do love me a good baseball fight.
Now, I mean, I don't know if I told you the story of being a kid and being at Kauffman Stadium up there. When I was a kid, A's, like the Bash Brothers, when Canseco, like when McGuire was like 140 pounds.
Yeah.
And Canseco was probably juicing. We just didn't know it. But the Bash Brothers, when I was a kid, were a big deal with the Oakland A's. Or they were to me and my brother. We go to this game at Kauffman Stadium because Dad would take us to games in St. Louis. We went to Atlanta a lot. We were big Braves fans as kids. Anyway, we're up there because we wanted to see Oakland. We wanted to see Canseco hit home runs. We wanted to see McGuire hit home runs, and we were there. And Mom was tired. It was Sunday. We'd been there all weekend. She was ready to go about the seventh inning. And we leave. And inevitably, you get out of the stadium and about 100 yards away to your car, and the place erupts. What did we miss? Because the score wasn't close.
Yeah.
All right, let's get on the road. We've got to get back home. 5 hours, you know, all right. You know, as kids, we hated it, but, you know, you got to do what Mom and Dad say. We get in the car, turn on the radio, and there had been a bench-clearing brawl.
A brouhaha.
And everybody, and Mom didn't understand the big deal of why we missed it. Like, we came to see home runs and fights.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah. That was so disappointing. I mean, obviously, here I am. 30 something years later, reminiscing about this story because we missed the fight.
Man. I mean, that's like the bonuses of all bonuses.
Because I've never been as a spectator at a baseball game where something like that really boiled over.
Yeah. And you've been to a lot of Braves Rack baseball games, but college baseball doesn't have bench clearing brawls, at least not very often.
There was like one back in the 90s at the old park. And like, because I heard Mike Irwin tell this story. I don't remember it, but I remember Irwin telling the story. He had to like turn in some of his video to Roy Kramer, who was the commissioner then, because they had like a, I don't remember who the teams were, Arkansas and somebody. I don't remember who it was. But yeah, they had one of the, but yeah, I've never seen, that would be the rare of all rarities.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, that was the funniest thing about it too, is not only that, Tommy, but it's like, imagine when those fights break out, the funniest people to run out there on the field is those in the bullpen. Yeah. Because it's like, what are you going to do? Yeah. You're having to run literally across the entire field.
But if you don't,
but I know if you don't, you're not a good teammate. Yeah. They're going to razz you.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was awesome, and I'm glad it happened. I'm glad I was able to watch it. It's the only reason I really get into baseball.
All right, Lisa in Jonesboro sending us messages on our live stream that we need to be talking football. For 31 days today?
31 days.
31 days.
Now, Lisa, you know we love you.
Lisa, we got 31 days.
You know you love you, but we also have a three-hour show.
Mm-hmm.
I got football on the docket here, all right?
Lisa, do you really think we're going to go 3 hours without talking some football?
Razorback football specifically. I mean, that's what we're going to do. Don't worry, Lisa. But there are some other things that happen in the sports world that we just want to bring up.
Lisa, we got a two-hour breakdown on Noah Gatlin coming up, so just hang in there.
Don't tease that, because then people are going to expect it, and then we're going to be sitting there just waiting, sitting on our hands, trying to figure out what in the world's going on with Noah
talking
Gatlin.
Talking about the right tackle, the backup right tackle at that.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
We've been discussing here over the past few weeks at the end of SEC Media Days. Fall camp, it's amazing that it starts tomorrow. Am I crazy right now? Is it tomorrow? It's tomorrow. Oh, no. They report tomorrow.
They report tomorrow. First practice is Friday.
Correct. Okay. So
6:15 or something. It's evening practice.
It all gets revved up.
6:15 on Friday is practice number one. They'll practice again Saturday, but it'll be a morning practice. None of this is open.
No.
So, I mean, do you care what time out there listening, what time they practice? You just want to know that they are practicing. So, you know, we'll have our first practice report, I guess, tomorrow.
Yeah.
I guess we could crank it up today that practice is 2 days away. Here's your practice report. So
yeah.
Clay Henry will be back with us Friday, and we'll start some practice reports then, which there will be nothing to report about practice. We'll just report that they're going to have practice.
That's right.
I can already tell you what's in it. We're going to have practice tonight. That'll be your Friday morning practice report.
So is Chad Morris meeting at like 8 o'clock that night with the media?
He will meet with the media after practice, yes.
So my goodness, might be a late night for our boy Andy Hodges.
Post-practice interview.
Post-practice Friday interview. All right.
It will probably be 8:30. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. I guess he wanted to know if you could cover that for him, by the way.
See, no one does the camera work like Andy does. I got to leave it to him.
Yeah.
He's our guy.
Saturday, and then it's a quick turnaround Saturday morning.
Yeah.
That's media day too.
Media day.
But media day's players only. There's no coaches on Saturday.
And no true freshmen. So.
And Sunday's an off day, then back at it. Basically, it's a Monday through Saturday operation. Every Sunday's an off day for the players, or at least as far as practice.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be an off day. Like they'll have to show up and probably watch film, do meetings, but
right.
No practices on Sundays.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is that a lot of those practices, the portion of it that's open to the media, which almost all of them are in the beginning, but it's just where you see stretching. You might see the field goal unit come out there and practice. But that's about it. There's no real in-depth breakdowns that you can really check out except for how good someone stretches.
Now, the first 20 minutes of practice open to the media.
Yeah. So if you've ever played football, even in the junior high school level, you remember what your practices were like the first 20 minutes. It was stretching. Stretching and basics.
Stretch lines. I mean, you had to...
Yeah.
We had to jog out on the field in a certain way. It was like military precision, dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go up to this yard line and you take a hard right. You go down there, and you're supposed to be third from the end. And you need to line up with the guy in front of you and the guy behind you. And if you didn't get it right, coach was going to blow the whistle, and we were going to do it again.
That's right. That's right.
We are not going to start practice this way, men. We're going to get it right. If we can't stretch right, we can't practice right.
That's right.
Yep. I've been there, done that.
Yeah, we had stretch leaders. You know, a guy would yell, right over left, ready, go, yep. 1, 2, 3.
Yep. Now, I see some of these teams, they have their stretch drills early in a circle. And I think that is unique. But well, the old way was used to everybody lined up every 5 yards all the way across the field.
I feel like stretching was one of those things that really just, I don't know.
I never felt like I got much out of it.
No. It's like I feel no differently.
Still can't touch my toes.
It's probably because I was stretching completely wrong. Right. It's probably why the reason I never felt anything afterwards.
Then we do that deal where you do back bends and you get up on your helmet. How did we not all break our neck doing that?
I don't know. I have a lot of questions about how certain things happened when I was younger in football. Like, I mean, just how it was all set up, how I didn't, you know, quit. Why did I not quit when it was 100 degrees out there and we're doing a county fair? I mean, those things were the worst. But it's football season, folks, and it's fall camp, and I know that a lot of people get excited too, because I don't know if you're the same way, Tommy, but when you did play, when you get to this point in time of the year and you start seeing football and seeing practices and whatnot, you start kind of feeling yourself like it's here. You almost want to go out there and start stretching.
Well, let's not get carried away.
I mean, that's how I feel. It's like I want to get back out there, and it's just something about the smell of the grass and the you know, the camaraderie of the players coming out and the helmets and the shoulder pads and the coaches yelling at you. There's just something majestic about it. I don't know if maybe I'm the only one that feels that way, but that's certainly the way that it feels like it goes every year for me. But now that the fact that it's finally here, it's finally arriving, we're going to have practice reports, we're going to have stuff to talk about. I'm excited about it. I know a lot of Razorback fans are getting excited. Apparently Lisa from Northeast Arkansas is excited about it too. She's been posting, I think, like 18 straight comments about football and how pumped up she is about it. But, you know, one of the things, though, that was mentioned earlier this week when we had the Bob Holt Cup, I'm officially naming it that, the golf tournament with the coaches and media, since we were able to catch up with some of the coaches on a few of the things that they talked about. One of the things that was one of the coaches I really wanted to talk to and get his thoughts and opinions was Dustin Frye, the offensive line coach, because we all know, we have talked about this since last year ended, Tommy, that the offensive line this year is going to be the make or break for the success of this team. You recruited really well at a lot of the skill positions.
Mm-hmm.
You have running backs coming back that are capable. You changed quarterbacks. You did really good with that, where you upgraded your two quarterbacks that you lost. You upgraded tremendously the two quarterbacks you brought in.
Right.
Feels like everywhere else, you've upgraded, for sure, no question. But the offensive line's the biggest question, because you lost three guys from last year that were, quote, your best offensive linemen on an offensive line that was not very good. So how could you get better at that position? Because you didn't go out and recruit four or five-star guys like you did at some of the other positions.
First thing you did is you fixed depth. Now, is it quality depth or just numbers? We'll start finding out on Friday. But I thought it was very interesting. Tom brought this point up. We heard it on Monday. They're going to have four groups of offenses working on two ends of the field. More reps, more snaps. Couldn't do that last year. Didn't have enough linemen to do it. You know, we got down to, what, 8 scholarship linemen at one point in a practice? I mean, they didn't have, because you're going to need, under my math, you're going to need 20 guys to play offensive line to have four offensive groups going on alternating plays on two ends of the field. You know, so they just weren't able to do some of these things last year. So I think the first thing they fixed to make the offensive line better, depth, numbers. Mm-hmm. Now, are they just bodies out there, or are these guys that are going to be able to be SEC linemen at some point? We'll start uncovering that on Friday.
And here's what Dustin Frye had to say about that depth that he has on the offensive line.
Day one, when we roll out there, it'll obviously be Colton at left tackle. It'll be Caps at left guard, Cleary at center. It'll be Shane Clinton at right guard, and it'll be Dalton Wagner at right tackle. Going through the second line, I'd rather not do that, and here's why: I haven't talked to my guys about it yet. And so I don't want them, and they'll be fine because, hey, get over it. You know, where you're at, where you're at. But let me talk to my guys about where they start. The first line set, but let me talk to the second and third guys before they find out on news tonight and their mom's calling and be like, hey, why are you playing guard? You were recruited as a tackle or something like that.
So he feels good about the depth, and he came out and basically said, hey, this is the starting five we were rolling out today, which I was kind of surprised that he did that. But here's the thing. Does that make you feel good, though? Because that's where those five are standing out and they're that they're looking that good and that's the direction they're going? Or is it because there's nobody else behind him and this is the best you got?
And those are the same five Clay's got on his depth chart that I think he really spent a lot of time talking to the coaches before he put that addition out. It's in Hogs Illustrated. Those are the same five that are there. And I bet that second group may not be exactly accurate, but it'll be pretty close to what's in there is the number two guys at a lot of those positions. I think your top 10 probably stand out. It's when you get into that next 10 that's where jobs are going to be won and lost. Not that someone that's not in that five can't be a starter this fall. But I think it's probably going to be hard for someone that's right now in the bottom 10 to take over a starting job. But we've seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll see what happens here. It's just you've got to be physically prepared to go through the rigors of an SEC schedule. And a lot of times newcomers just aren't quite there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be interested, like a guy like Cunningham or some of these guys that are newer to the system, how all of that blends and meshes in. But I like the way Dustin Fry handled that. Hey, I don't want my guys to find out what's in my head, my depth chart on the news tonight. So.
Yeah, but obviously he's conveyed the message that these are going to be our five guys.
I don't think
the team.
That's any secret to anybody.
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so either. But it's also...
And that's probably how they left spring.
Yeah, and it's probably also a message, too, of... Hey, well, just having bodies, for one. I mean, because you mentioned that they only had 8 scholarship linemen at one point in time. I mean, just having bodies is going to be huge. But we were talking about, hey, odds that, or I guess the over-under is how we put it. The over-under of Ben Hicks starting how many games this year for Arkansas. It might be the same thing with offensive line, barring any injury, Tommy's like, all right, so what's the chances that the starting five he just listed, assuming that's the starting five in game one, what's the chances that those guys start the entire season? All five of them, each game. Of course, barring injury.
I don't know.
I mean, that's the question for them, obviously, is because It's like, how confident are you, how comfortable are you that these are the guys that are far and away the best five?
We talk about rotations on the line, but generally that's it on the defensive side. You like to find five guys that can play like a hand in a glove on that offensive line and roll with them. But this offense and their desire to play fast and get to a point where they can snap the ball a lot in the game is going to require more linemen because you're going to need to give some of these guys a break so that they have some gas in the tank in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be really interesting and really important who the top 10 or 12 linemen are, not just the first five out there.
Yeah, because like you said, when you go fast, you're going to have guys wear down quicker.
Big guys are going to wear down especially. I mean, they've slimmed these guys down, got them in better shape, but particularly in September when the temperatures are still up there, you know, in the 90s at game time, even at night, it's going to be still sticky and humid, or a good chance of it in September. You know, when you're 285, 290, 300, you're going to need a break. Just the way it is.
Yep. That's the way Chad Morris wants it. I mean, that's why depth is so important and why it's been such a thing that they've been having to accomplish here.
And why it was such a problem last
year. Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle. And Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas.
Go to the phone lines and welcome in Andrew Hutchinson of Hogbeat.com. Appreciate you joining us, Andrew. You ready to break down the Democratic debate from last night?
I am the last person you need to be asking anything about that. I don't really pay attention to all that. I know I probably should, but I'm too busy worried about sports.
Well, that's great because we will ask you something that you know a little bit about, and that is Arkansas Razorback football team starting up fall practice late this week, and of course we're going to get right into the middle of everything starting next week, and I know you're going to be busy along with it too. We had a chance to be able to catch up with some of the assistant coaches. I know you were there as well and played golf with us there at the Bob Holt Cup, as I deemed it, but a few of the things that we were able to discuss, I know everybody got to talk to coaches, but as far as the thing that stood out to you the most, which would you say was the quote or the soundbite, however you want to put it, that stood out to you when you were able to talk to all these assistant coaches?
Yeah, well, first I'll preface it by saying I talked to all the offensive coaches. My coworker, Nick, he focused on the defensive side of the ball. You know, with 10 assistants, it's kind of hard to hit up all of them in the allotted time. And, I really enjoyed talking to Dustin Fry a little bit. You know, he gave us his starting offensive line. for day one, which he emphasized was penciled in, not something that you know, is really set in stone right now. But that doesn't include Myron Cunningham. But he said that's a guy he's going to have to figure out how to work into this starting offensive line, because he has a chance to be pretty special, according to Dustin Fry. So I'm anxious to see how and where he fits in, whether that be at left tackle or if Colton Jackson can truly, you know, be an improved offensive lineman there at that, you know, all important left tackle spot, or if he'll, you know, maybe be on the right side or be in one of the guard positions, or, you know, where exactly he's going to fit, because it seems like he believes that Cunningham is one of the top five offensive linemen, but mm-hmm. it's just a matter of where he's going to fit in. So I thought that was fascinating and something that I'm going to be keeping a close eye on, you know, this fall camp, in addition to the thing everyone wants to talk about in the quarterback battle. Yeah.
Well, let's stay with the offensive line for a few more moments. Ty Clary at center. It seems like Arkansas's had a great tradition. I mean, you can go back, you know, 10 years to Jonathan Lewis and Travis Swanson, but it seems like Arkansas's always kind of shifted their best O-lineman to the center position. Ty Clary right now is kind of slated to be your starting center. Your thoughts on Clary there, and if Colton Jackson or Myron Cunningham or some of these other guys you've talked about are really the best linemen, how does that really fit in the philosophy? It just seems like with Ragnow and Froholt and a lot of these guys, oftentimes they'll move the lineman they at least trust the most to the middle of the line.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see how, if he truly does stay consistent with snapping the ball, and if you do put someone there, it's not as easy as it was, you know, under Bielema's system, where it was, you know, they were all under center, and it's a little bit easier to snap like that. The shotgun snap, as we saw last year, if you're not super familiar with it, you know, Ty Clary didn't even play center when he was at Fayetteville High School. So that was a completely new concept for him, and he really struggled, you know, rolling snaps back there, high snaps, you know, to the right or left of the quarterback. That was a really big struggle last year. So hopefully he could get that figured out, and then, you know, he could focus on the blocking. I felt like Ty Clary wasn't awful whenever he played. I think he played right or left guard, one of the guard positions, and he wasn't terrible when he was there. So I'm anxious to see how he could do if he just gets the mental side of it down, where he can and get the good snap and everything. And then if he isn't the guy, who else could it be? I mean, Silas Robinson's the guy who I think they hope is the center of the future, but he's going to be a redshirt freshman who I don't believe played any snaps last year as a true freshman. So I'm not sure if he'll be ready, or if they could move a, you know, I don't know if Myron Cunningham's ever snapped the ball in his life, or any of those other guys. So that's something I'm anxious to see if Ty Clary does, you know, hang on to that center spot, or, you know, maybe a Shane Clinton. I've heard his name thrown around at center before, but I don't remember him getting a lot of reps there during spring ball. So lots of things to watch along that offensive line. I actually mentioned that in a top position battle story I wrote, I think, last week. I didn't really mention just left tackle, just center. I said the entire offensive line, because I think it's going to shuffle quite a bit, at least early on in fall camp, before they settle on a starting five.
It's me, Andrew Hutchison, right now of Hogbeat.com on the Morning Rush. Andrew, sticking with the offensive line, because I know that when you were able to talk with Dustin Fry, and I got the same impact from him, that it seemed like he's really excited, really confident about the guys that he has. But my question would be, is the guys he mentioned as being the starters, are those the guys that are starting because they are far and away the best and they've really stood out? Or are they starting because they're really the only guys that they feel comfortable with running the offense, having a little bit of experience for a lot of them and feeling best in that position? Because I feel like that's going to be a really big difference. And you can have depth all day long, but is it quality depth is really the big question.
Yeah, I think right now it's that's who they're comfortable with at the moment, you know, because he did emphasize that, you know, this could change, and it most likely will, especially when you throw in Myron Cunningham, because he wasn't in that starting five. I mean, you had Colton Jackson, Austin Capps, Ty Clary, Shane Clinton, and Dalton Wagner. You know, Noah Gatlin could maybe, you know, push Wagner there for the right tackle spot. You know, he started a couple of games last year as a true freshman, which you really don't see very often in the SEC, a true freshman starting on the offensive line. So I think that right now that's kind of what they're comfortable with, kind of that's how they ended spring ball. But I think they feel good about the competition they're going to have there, because, as you mentioned, they have more depth this year than last year by a long shot. I mean, I think they've got 14, 15, maybe 16 scholarship offensive linemen that they're going to have for practice, whereas last year they had like 8 healthy offensive linemen, period, including a walk-on. So they're going to have enough players to actually have 3 or 4 actual units where they're going to be able to actually create some competition, and you're not going to have guys, you know, starting by default. You're going to actually have the best guys, whoever that may be, starting. You know, are they going to be good enough to compete in the SEC? That remains to be seen. But it is a better situation than they had last year, just from a number standpoint.
All right, let's get to the quarterbacks, because I think that's where a lot of the focus will be. A lot of people have drawn it down to Hicks and Starkel. That's really the quarterback battle. Is it that simple? And how concerned are you about some of the hiccups in practice early on? And I don't know how much we'll get to see of that, but you don't have a quarterback that's taken a game snap, at least on campus, with the Razorbacks that's really in the quarterback room right now. How big a concern is that for you heading into the first practice this week?
Well, considering both of them have actual experience in college football, I'm not super concerned about that. My biggest concern is how quickly they're going to be able to settle on one guy. I mean, I think we saw last year when they went, you know, waffled back and forth between Cole Kelly and Ty Story, it lasted 4 weeks into the season, and it didn't really go well. And I think they recognize that, and their goal is to name a guy, you know, sooner rather than later. But it just depends on which guy, you know, shows that they're the most consistent. And I'm just concerned that that's not going to happen as early as they're hoping for it to happen. But, you know, it's an interesting battle. I mean, I think it's one of the more interesting battles in the country, just because how often you see a team land not one but 2 graduate transfer quarterbacks. I mean, usually those guys are going somewhere. They're guaranteed to start at that position. So it's going to be fascinating to watch, and I really think that Ben Hicks probably has the advantage just because he has, the experience of playing with Chad Morris at SMU and knows the offense, you know, like the back of his hand. But I do see Nick Starkel being the more talented guy, and according to Joe Craddock, what he said the other day at the golf tournament is that, you know, he's a really smart guy, and so far he's picked up the offense really well based on the meetings they've had. Obviously, I haven't had a chance to get out on the practice field and actually watch them on the field. That'll come on Friday. But he's been impressed with what he's shown that he's learned so far. So I'm anxious to see how they compete and how quickly they can get a starter name.
Well, and that's what it's going to come down to, because I feel like last year, Andrew, that it seemed like, I'm not saying that the coaching staff had no idea what they were doing, but when you see in hindsight how the process went, they didn't name start, then the first 3 or 4 games or so of the season, they were messing around and going along with the quarterbacks. It made me wonder, okay, were they seeing one thing in practice, but when the game started, it was a completely different thing, and that was the problem? Because let's be honest, the way that the quarterback situation was handled last year, this year there's a lot of Razorback fans that are a little skeptical of this coaching staff and how they're going to handle the quarterback position at the start of the season, and we know game 2 might be the biggest game of the season for the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. That game too is going to be big on Arkansas's bowl hopes. I mean, you got to beat Ole Miss if you're going to have any shot at making a bowl game, and that's going to come down to who the quarterback is week 1, because you figure whoever it is, whether it's Hicks or Starkel, they'll perform well against Portland State, and that quarterback will probably keep the starting job for the all important Ole Miss game, and then of course after that you got Colorado State, which is another big game, a team that beat Arkansas last year, so. It's going to be interesting how they handle it and when they make a switch, if they make a switch, and if they, when they do make a switch, are they going to make it and stick with it? Because as you said, last year, I think the first 4 games they rotated which guy was a starter, and, you know, you'd have a guy coming off the bench, and it wasn't good. And the fans have every reason to be skeptical, but I do think the coaches feel a little bit better about the quarterback situation, you know, because they have a guy who they have a ton of experience with, and Ben Hicks at SMU, and a guy in Nick Starkel who has experience playing in the SEC and having success in the SEC, you know, in a similar system. So I do think they feel a little bit more comfortable, and they do like the situation. I think the situation is better, but still it's going to come down to which quarterback, you know, can show that consistency in fall camp, and that's what Joe Craddock really emphasized with know, which guy can be really consistent. Because they said last year it was almost like, you know, one guy was great one day and the other was terrible, and then the next day it was the complete reverse. And they just can't have that happen again this fall camp. They're going to have to settle on a guy and get it figured out for at least maybe try to get a couple of weeks before the week one. That way you get a scrimmage in there and everything, and you get to develop that chemistry with the starting unit.
All right, Andrew, before we let you get out of here, I know you've put together this list, and I'm hoping I'm wording it right. Is it the all-time 2010s team? Is that how you say it? With the base?
I'm calling it the 2010s all-decade team.
There you go.
Yeah. But it's a really, I mean, you submitted your ballot. It's tough to pick out some of those positions for the Diamond Hogs. I mean, they've been so good the last 10 years. Four trips to the College World Series. You know, you've had basically the Heisman Trophy of college baseball won by Andrew Benintendi. Tons of really good pitchers. So I've still got the balloting open until 5 o'clock this afternoon. You can check it out on hogbeat.com or on my Twitter account, NWA Hutch. It's pinned on there. Still time to vote. Get your ballots in. I've got over 500 votes already. And definitely there's still some tight battles. So people could still get in there and alter the fan vote.
So real quick, who would be your outfield? Because I think that's you've had a lot of great outfielders that had good bat too. So who would be the outfielders in this squad? We won't go through your squad, but that to me, that's the toughest one to pick three.
Yeah, I think Andrew Benintendi's a shoe-in,
right?
Because he, you know, was a National Award winner. I picked Dominic Fletcher just because he was so consistent for 3 years, really good defensively. He would probably be my center fielder if I actually had to put this team out on the field. And then, you know, it comes down to whether or not you want Brett Eibner, who only had 1 year in the decade, but it was a great year. 22 home runs, I think it was, in 2010. Or if you like Heston Kerstad. I went with Brett Eibner as my third outfielder, and I kept Kerstad as my designated hitter just because he's just so good at the plate, has a ton of home runs already, and he's probably going to make a run next year at perhaps the all-time home run record. But he's already done so far in 2 years in the decade enough to warrant a spot on the team.
I'll be interested to see how the results play out there for Andrew. Andrew Hutchinson of hogbeat.com. Always appreciate you joining us, Andrew. Great stuff as always, man. I'm sure we'll be catching up with you a lot during football season, all right?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Further ado, let's hop right into it.
What is wrong with you?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
That's my secret, Captain. I'm always angry.
No, man, I'm pissed. All y'all take this down. I'm pissed, man.
What's Your Beef Wednesday? Presented by Breeden RV and Power Sports, home of maintenance for life.
All right, it's What's Your Beef Wednesday, presented by Brendan RV and Power Sports. Upfront, no-hassle pricing. Every trailer and RV heavily discounted. Savings on new travel trailers and new motor homes. Home of the maintenance for life, a place where customers become their friends. Monthly service specials, great selection of pre-owned trailers and motor homes off Highway 64 between Van Buren and Alma, where dreams become reality. Let Breeden RV and Power Sports start your adventure at BreedenRVs.com. All right, so What's Your Beef Wednesday? Still my favorite segment, and I want to kick it off with something a little more simple and something that I feel like a lot of people can probably relate to. And I know that, Tommy, you can relate to it as well since you've been in this business and you know how it is. We, here on this show, talk about Razorback football in the upcoming season in a lot of different angles and from a lot of different perspectives. Sometimes we talk about it from the offensive perspective or the defense perspective. Sometimes we talk about it from Arkansas's or maybe the SEC's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We break it all down, look at every angle, try to give you as much information as possible when it comes to this team. But one thing that will never get old, or actually, excuse me, it does get old. I was trying to be sarcastic, but it does get old very often, is that if we spend one segment or one show looking at Razorback football and saying, you know, here's why it might be pretty good. Here's why it might be a good season.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why they may go 6-6, maybe 7-5, or as we discussed earlier this week, here's what they would need to do to go 8-4 where everything goes their way and nothing goes the way of their opponents.
Because this team, this program, is due some breaks.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
You feel like, you know, the karma balances out over time.
Mm-hmm.
They're due some good fortune.
That's right.
lack of, you know, when I say good, you know, the wide receiver stepped out of bounds for the opposing team versus broke free for 80 yards. Now he stepped out back at the 42 and replay caught it.
Yes. Those types
of
breaks.
And they brought that touchdown back. You didn't have a bunch of injuries at a thin position like linebacker, offensive line. You know, just the bounce of the ball. Just
correct.
Some of these things that seems like when it has rained, it's hurricane on this team and this program lately, and us as a fan base.
That's right. And that's logical. That's okay. That's acceptable. That's a way to look at it.
All right.
But
what's your beef?
My beef is when we do that discussion, I have multiple people who will text in at the text line or tweet at me or whatever that either A, gets upset with me because I'm getting people's hopes up when we start talking about the Razorback football program and the season in a positive light, or they say we're being homers and biased and looking with our rose-colored, rose-tinted glasses on or Razorback-colored glasses on, however you want to say it. And the other, and my favorite one, is where they get so mad and so upset that they start giving me the reasons of why Arkansas is going to suck and how it's going to be god-awful and terrible. And here's, and that's upsetting, but my beef is this, folks. We do 5 shows a week.
15 hours worth.
That's right. We do multiple shows sometimes throughout a week, depending on the season, where we have pre-games and post-games included into that.
Right.
There's a lot of different opportunities where we discuss Razorback football in depth. And if you listen to all those shows, or at least at the minimum, listen to this morning show here on the Morning Rush, you will see and realize that we talk about all parts of it. We talk about if Arkansas, if it goes great. But we also talk about if it ends up being a nightmare season.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? How do we feel about this team going 3-9 or 4-8? What would happen? How would it happen? Could it be possible? Of course it's possible. We break it down. We do all of those things. So don't take what we say in a segment that we do and just in the smallest portion of the conversation in the grand scheme of this show and say that we're either too negative or too positive, that we're either homers or we're haters. Just take it all into consideration and understand that we look at it from every light, every angle, every perception. That's how we do it, and we want to continue to do that. And so throughout this fall camp, throughout the football season, just keep that in mind. That's all I'm asking. So I'm beefing with those who just take the little small comments, blow it up into that's how you think, that's how you are, you suck because you feel that way.
Yeah.
That's my beef today.
Was it a dream of yours to play sports as a kid? Is that, I mean, one of the things I think every child at some point,
like professional sports and all,
had a dream, and there's a ton of, you know, and some just dream of playing for the local high school team.
Yeah.
And then you get there, you're pretty good. Then you dream of being a Razorback or playing college sports. And then, if you're fortunate in that very small slice of the athletic pie, you have the talent to go play, like, big-time Division I sports. You know, then, like, an even smaller slice, make it onto the pros. And whatever sport it is. Baseball, get to the NBA, get to the NFL. And doesn't it seem like, doesn't it just make you mad when you see a guy that has the talent, has the ability, waste it?
Yes, more than anything.
I mean, listen, Robert Kimdichie this week just really, it makes me mad when, you know, none of us in here, are you 6 foot, Ty? Are you quite there?
Quite under.
You're the tallest one in the group here.
Slightly under.
Yeah, so none of us in here are 6 foot tall. None of us were blessed genetically. And a lot of these guys have the genetic blessing with the athleticism, the size, the strength, the things that you just can't control. I mean, you are what you are when you were born into this world. You know, you were destined to be 5'8", 210. You know, just the way it is, you know? And that you just can't go to the weight room and get taller. You can only get so strong. There's only so much you can do.
So that lifting hindered your growth back in the day,
Tommy. I guess so. I guess it just, I'm beefing with the fact that you get a guy like Kimdichie.
Yeah.
That makes it. Big-time star at Ole Miss, no matter how much he was being paid. Big-time SEC player, right? We'd all agree with
that. That's right. Big time.
You make it to the pros, and dude, you can't even show up to camp in shape when you're being paid to?
The bare minimum.
I mean, we would do it for league minimum.
Yeah, if you told me, hey, you got
much less the millions a year. So, I mean, I know we talked about this earlier in the week, but it just that sticks in my craw, man.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
And anytime you see an athlete just waste the potential, when we would all kill to have the opportunity to, A, do something you love and then get paid tens of millions of dollars to do it, and you eat your way out of a job, unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Because I'm sure you've thought about it, too. If it's like, if I had my mind into that guy's body, you know, that guy's physique, that guy's a God-given talent, you're right. I could be the greatest of all time. But that's the thing, is like when you're bringing up Robert Kendici, the thing I think about is like, man, if someone told me, all right, John, you got 6 months. 6 months, you got to get in shape. And if you get in a good enough shape, you're going to get a shot in the NFL.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I will go to the gym every day. My diet will change completely.
Yeah, you could not eat at all. Quit drinking beer.
Done. Done.
But you're still going to be 5'9". I mean, it's nothing we can do about it.
Right.
You know?
But if someone told me, though, that that opportunity was happening.
Yeah. We weren't blessed, though, to be, you know, 6'5 or 6'6, you know, whatever it is, not in his situation, but just any of these guys' situations. And you just piss it away.
Mm-hmm.
Just makes you mad.
I know. And it happens all the time. All the time you see athletes just throw it away.
I wonder if they get burned out. Clay brought this up earlier in the week on Monday, and I think there's some merit to it. The fact that, you know, you played in junior high, okay, that's one thing. High school becomes a little more intense and a grind. You get into college, and it's, you know, you got classes and you got all this stuff, but it's a 15, 18-hour-a-day deal during the season. And even in the offseason, it's demanding. Then you get to the pros, and it's really about self-accountability in the offseason. Obviously, Robert Kendici had none. But you got to self-police. You got to hire trainers. You got to get people around you to hold you accountable. You know, and it's just, are you wired to go through that kind of burning white hot desire to be the best? It's where a lot of these guys just, they don't get it.
Yeah.
They don't have it.
And I think it shows exactly what their ultimate goal and where their mindset was. Was it to play football? Was it to win a championship? Or was it to get paid?
I mean, it's one thing to get caught up. It's one thing to get caught up in drugs or get caught up in stuff that gets a hold of your life and ruins more than your career. That's another thing, that when you're being paid millions of dollars a year to play a game we'd all die to play for a living, and to just not have the desire to work out and eat right.
The very bare minimum that's asked.
Exactly. That's my beef today.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. That's a good one. Because I tell you what, if there was a way to make it work to where I could have my mind in Robert Kendici's body right now, I would be...
It's the genetic lottery.
I'm telling you.
For all of these guys, you know?
Wish more people understood it. Wish more people got it, but unfortunately, that's not the case for Robert Kendici.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.